As fierce storms continue to sweep from Houston, Texas, up into the American heartlands, a storm for ideological and virtual control is raging across the political landscape. This war can only be settled after the conventions, but the American people will not be satisfied until they feel their constitutional republic is reinvigorated and nourished by the seeds and fruit of democracy, real representational government. These feckless pashas think America is in their pockets, such as the strangely naive and ambitious Paul Ryan or the over-the-hill wannabe Mitt Romney, who is about as fresh as last decade's already passed kidney stone. They believe that they'll be the candidate killers. Romney plans to run a third-party candidate who will easily knock out Trump. Then he will step into his shoes as a savior to thunderous applause, at least in his mind. And like the challenger in the Golden Bough, the famous mythological story, Romney hallucinates that when he kills the king, he takes over by default his kingdom, just like in the last scene of Apocalypse Now, when Colonel Kurtz is killed by Martin Sheen's character. But the real truth is that Trump has repeatedly played the iceberg to all these would-be Titanics. Every expert or politico who had a serious assault against Trump paid with life, if not soul, because somehow through some strange animal instinct, call it animus favor, Trump always knows the exact right response or strategy to vanquish his tormentors. And who will be his VP? Who knows? Does it even matter? What would be especially rich is if Trump chose the two opinionated by half GOP castoff, Sarah Palin, and brought her in as his number two. This would send shockwaves of astonishment through the GOP and waves of revulsion amidst the Dems. In other words, it's a 50-50 chance. I'd give it an even chance that he'd do that just to upset people. One must think adding Newt Gingrich to this troika as Secretary of State would be a masterstroke. And then Chris Christie, vetted for the Department of Justice Attorney General. Cruz polished up for the SCOTUS empty seat, and Scott Walker handed the Department of Education, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Hillary continues to rise like a barnacle-encrusted sea cow, looking and sounding worse each day, as if that were even possible. And now Bill Clinton is being dragged gloriously back into the circle where Hillary proudly offers him up as an economic czar, like a cat offering last night's mouse. This plants the dagger once and for all into the leaky and corroded heart of feminism and the notion that Hillary can make it on her own. Apparently, the only thing Hildebeest does well on her own is to get into trouble. Can a 70-year-old woman with the voice of a harpy, the breath of a hyena in the face of a month-old open-faced tuna sandwich be called a bimbo? Because this could be Bill's last bimbo eruption. Stay tuned, sports fans. All right, don't hate me for pointing out the obvious. Hillary Clinton is well past her sell-by date, but she's leading, and she's got a lot to show for it. So, I mean, I don't know what else you can say, but she's odds-on favorite to, without even any serious competition from Bernie. She's lucky at this point. She's running against a communist or a socialist, me. And so, who do you think is going to win this whole thing? I really think it's the Donald, and you can't really blame me for thinking that, of course, because the fact of the matter is, he has got some sort of a, like I said in the opening, he's got some sort of a strange ability to kind of suss up the moment and with the exact right shot. He's like Larry Bird, Michael Jordan, whatever great, great past athlete that you want to drag up. Larry Bird was able to hit any shot in the book, I guess, except a thundering slam dunk, and Michael Jordan always came through at the last second. That's kind of what it reminds me of, is that, you know, Trump has got this sense for the moment and the exact right thing to say. And Scott Adams, who does the Dilbert column, said, quite frankly, it reminds him of a master wizard who was full of verbal kill shots. So there was a race last night or yesterday, and you know, my computer needs to enter the graveyard with an axe buried into its hard drive. But it was a close race, very, very close race down to kind of the last moment. Bernie won Oregon, but he lost Kentucky. And so anyway, I have actually an answer for my computer problems that doesn't involve violence. Violence is never the answer, friends, unless it is in response to violence, the answer. But did you ever watch Kung Fu, story about the little kid that kind of half the Eurasian kid that was trained how to be a master fighter? And he always tried to avoid violence, but always ended up having to kick somebody in the teeth. But there is a new frisson of fear that has around the Democratic Party. And the fear is that there is a revolt coming, and there was a revolt that occurred in Nevada that is not even being really talked about. Unfortunately, people need to know that there was an all-out war in Nevada. After this fight over the delegates, let me, all right, hold on a second here. Is there a Catholic saint of computers, technology, that type of thing? 523-1450, feel free to call in if there is. But kind of makes you wonder, doesn't it? There's obviously a flurry of demonic activity that's attacking our electronic devices and using our electronic devices to take away the might and sincerity of America. All right, so here's a little clip. If dear God, please play this for the listeners. Bernie Sanders wins in Oregon, but needed Kentucky to CNBC.
Won by one percentage point, and they're still counting some of the votes this morning. We knew that Kentucky was going to be a lot harder for Bernie Sanders than Oregon. He won Oregon by 8 percentage points over Clinton, but in Kentucky, she really fought for it, and that is shown in the results this morning, in the numbers that we continue to see. For Sanders, he was hoping to make it a West Coast sweep, having previously won Washington State, now Oregon, and now he says he's going to go on to win California. He's got two events there today. It is certainly the big prize left of all the primaries. As for Kentucky, Sanders' team says that they may ask for a recount as they await the 100% final results on that one. They say they'll make a decision on that today. Meantime, we're also watching the Republicans, and the big news on that side is that Donald Trump sat down with the Republican Party and worked out a joint fundraising agreement. It's something that Hillary Clinton's already had on the other side, but because he is self-funded, paid for everything pretty much in his own campaign and done very little fundraising, they hadn't sat down and done this yet. What this means is that those down ballot candidates will be getting some money when Donald Trump does his fundraising.
Very interesting, Tracy. Can you just explain to us, why is Bernie Sanders still in this race?
Well, because Bernie Sanders wants to have an impact. What he has said now is that he plans to stay in the race until June 14th. That's the D.C. primary here, the last one. And then he plans to take their fight to the convention. That doesn't mean that he still thinks that he has a realistic chance at getting the nomination, but he wants to have an impact on what's important to the Democratic Party. And frankly, he still has millions of followers who aren't too keen on Hillary Clinton, so he could certainly have some influence here.
Yeah, I guess I just wonder, Tracy, whether it ends up hurting Clinton and the Democratic Party in the long run, and whether it helps Donald Trump, who is the presumptive nominee right now and is campaigning against Clinton.
Right. It's possible. It certainly could. And there's no question that Hillary Clinton is going to have an uphill battle trying to get some of those Sanders supporters on her side. When we take a look at the breakdown of some of the polling that we've seen, Clinton supporters were much more likely to support Sanders than Sanders supporters were to back Clinton. So, yeah, she's going to have some work to do if he doesn't come out heartily endorsing her sometime before or at least at that convention.
All right. So Trump has come out with his net worth, his income for 2015, which was $557 million. Is what he claims he made last year. Now, you might say that's a lot of money. Of course it is. But don't forget that Jeff Bezos, who owns Amazon, and I use Amazon all the time. I use it, of course, to order books, but I also have Amazon Prime, which gives you shipping for $4 of anything, for a lot of stuff anyway. And so I can buy a penny book and get it to my P.O. box for $4. But there's also media in there. There's movies and such. And there is the other day I had mentioned it to you. There was an hour where Jeff Bezos made $1 billion in 1 hour. So, I mean, you know, you can't really compare the Bezoses or the Trumps with Bezos and stuff. But, you know, Trump is building his net worth to a certain extent the old-fashioned way, through building hotels and the like. So... All right, continuing on our celebration of classical music. This is actually taken from a movie called American Gigolo. It is a very famous piece by Mozart that's kind of modernized. 618 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523 1450, and 805-618-02. Text will be right back to get into. I want to examine what happened in Nevada. It was shocking. Even though Hillary is on the cusp of winning and is about to take out old man Sanders at the knees, there's a lot of fury in the Democratic Party. It is a time of unrest that is very exciting. Be right back. All right, so some breaking news here for you. Let me kind of set the table here for you, though, real quick here. Who's the most corrupt person in politics 2015?
Kimberly, is it also, I mean, let's just break it down and be real here.
Okay, let's do it.
Is it that people also aren't going to say, no, I hate all these candidates, and we're going to say we have a terrible field, and we're going to lose to the most corrupt woman in the history of the world?
Oh, now you've done
it.
Wow. Yeah.
To say, I'm not
give her a shot.
Yeah,
truth serum over there.
Yeah. Truth serum.
Yeah,
get her a scoop of gold medal.
People, yeah, let me cheer you up with some ice cream.
All right, so that was said as a joke on one of those Fox shows, but Watchdog names Hillary Clinton as the most corrupt politician of 2015, and this came out. I just noticed this. Somebody just told me about this in 2015 December, late December. As corrupt officials go, Hillary Clinton is in a league of her own. That's according to a Washington ethics watchdog that just named the Democratic presidential frontrunner as the top ethics violator of 2015. the Nonpartisan Foundation for Accountability and Civic Trust, FACT, placed Clinton at the top of its worst ethics violators of 2015 list after finding, quote, overwhelming evidence she abused her official position as Secretary of State. FACT is calling for various federal investigations into her unethical behavior, much of which has been uncovered by the ongoing scandal surrounding her State Department emails. And FACT stated in a news release, those emails remained hidden from the public until earlier this year when it was discovered that Secretary Clinton conducted government business on her private email server, and a judge ultimately ordered that she turn over and the State Department released the emails, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All right, so most corrupt, I don't know. That is one heck of a competition. But, all right, so what happened? What exactly happened in Nevada? I've got Stank Unger, this guy from used to be on MSNBC as the Young Turks, and he's got a little commentary on this. I gag when I hear this guy, so it may have to be a short little snippet here, but check it out.
As we showed you the chaos that happened in the Nevada State Democratic Convention, CNN didn't show you that chaos. Here, I'm going to play the clip again. Let's actually go back and show them the ending of the convention, the video we just played in another story where Roberta Lang gavels to close the end of the convention. She, as she has done throughout the day, asks for I votes and nay votes and then ignores them completely. Now, here's what CNN never showed you. Let's watch.
This lady is at the Democratic or the Nevada Democratic Convention, and she's the head of the Nevada Dem Party. Oh my God, I can't believe it. Somebody threw a very heavy object at this lady, and she barely dodged it, and it hit the screen right behind her.
That was not a Sanders supporter getting violent with the gavel. That was the Democratic Party chair in Nevada, right? Ayes, aye. No, nays, no! The ayes have it. Bam! I'm gone. Okay. So that, don't talk about that. I mean, even John Ralston, who they respect more than anyone else as a reporter in Nevada, who clearly can't stand the Bernie Sanders people, dripping with sarcasm with everything he writes about them, calls them rabble-rousers without a cause. Even he had to concede, well, those votes were ridiculous. Obviously, the no's were louder. Obviously, right? But CNN didn't think that was an interesting story. With all the interesting videos surrounding it, no, don't talk about that. But now that the Hillary Clinton campaign has said that Bernie Sanders people supporters were violent, with no evidence, they have a bunch of phone calls that no one knows who made them. By the way, again, Hillary Clinton's team has a thing called Correct the Record, where they pay people to cause trouble online. How do we know that they didn't make the calls? You don't know. You don't know, right? But you just stated as if all, not just that a couple of people made calls to Roberta Lang, and if it is Bernie Sanders supporters, it is horrible, and they should have never done that.
All right, so there's a lot of people that are upset at this, and here's a little bit. This is pretty exciting stuff, folks. It doesn't get more exciting than this. Angry socialists. I mean, don't we have angry socialists to thank for the last two world wars and communists in Russia especially? Check this out. CNN.
Directed at Nevada Democratic Chairwoman Roberta Lang. She presided over the gathering, eventually ending it over security concerns. Lang and her family have become the target of harassment, threats. Here is just one of the calls she has received.
Hi, Roberta Lang. This is a citizen of the United States of America, and I just wanted to let you know that I think people like you should be hung in a public execution to show this world that we won't stand for this sort of corruption. I don't know what kind of money they're paying for you, but I don't know how you sleep at night. You are a sick, twisted piece of shit, and I hope you'll burn for this, cowardly running off the stage. I hope people find you.
What the?
Wow. Lang also receiving threatening text messages like this one. It says, quote, hey, bleep. Loved how you broke the system. We know where you live, where you work, where you eat, where your kids go to school, grandkids. We have everything on you. They bring in the woman on the receiving end of the threats. She's Roberta Lang. She is the chairwoman of the Nevada Democratic Party. Roberta, thank you so much for joining me. I am so sorry you were having to go through this. I mean, hung in a public execution. And these are just a few examples. How often are you getting these threats? What else are they saying?
Hi, Brooke. Yeah, I get threats every 1 to 2 seconds on my phone, on my email, on Twitter, on Facebook. It is endless. In fact, it has gotten worse as time goes on. And it's awful. They've attacked my work, where my job here as a state party chair is volunteer. They've attacked the place where I am employed, posted, it's a restaurant and gaming bar. They posted on their Yelp bad things about the restaurant. They've attacked my husband. They've made a clone book of my name and said awful things about my husband that looks like it's coming from me. There's no end to the threats and the vile comments that have been made.
What is your husband saying? What's your family saying?
Look, I mean, we're raising our 5-year-old grandson, and this is something that you wouldn't expect in America. We all feel threatened. I mean, it is a threatening situation. It's vile. It's awful. And we take them very seriously. But look, we're not going to stop. We are fighting for unity to bring the Democratic Party together and elect a Democrat for the White House and come out of Philadelphia with our nominee.
Let me read a quote from Harry Reid, the Senate minority.
Who cares about Harry Reid? Anyway, I just find this absolutely amazing. So here's a dedication to Roberta from Eric Clapton. 632 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450, KOBE 523, 1450, and 805-6180 to text. Roberta, Eric Clapton, Dr. John, we'll be right back.
I ain't mad at you, Roberta. Don't you be mad at me, Roberta. I ain't mad at you, Roberta. Don't you be mad at me, Roberta. One and one is two, Roberta. Two and one is three.
All right, so got a little bit of weather here for you before we get back into this what happened in Nevada question. And a parade of severe thunderstorms, flash flooding will pound south into late week.
That looks like fun, right? Well, Florida was in the middle of a deluge yesterday. Incidentally, they began their wet season yesterday, and boy, did they. Vero Beach, they had a single-day record rainfall of 11.2 inches. It wasn't just the rain. There was hail and also those winds. Look how crazy that picture is. That's a single-engine plane that flipped in St. Lucie. Now, more rain is on the way, and we're really talking a slow soaker because the rain is setting up for the rest of the week. So today we're going to see rain from Florida pushing all the way back to Texas. Not extremely heavy rain today, but we will have some scattered showers and thunderstorms. Now, on Thursday, severe weather returns back through the southern plains. So Texas, yeah, you could see some scattered showers and thunderstorms, and then more rain for Florida as well. The beat goes on Friday, but we do have along the eastern Gulf a chance of some severe weather. So when all is said and done, here's what we're looking at for additional rainfall. Widespread 1 to 2 in Orlando. We could see 2 to 3 back around New Orleans.
All right, so
they gave authorities the slip in a Prius. Now the four most wanted men in the world are stealing cars.
What started as amateur heist is now a global phenomenon.
Look, we're trending. You see that? They're famous.
Toyota, let's go places.
Locally severe thunderstorms Wednesday afternoon tonight.
Oh, we just got some new video of aerial shots of the damage left by the very violent EF4 tornado that hit near Winniewood, Oklahoma.
Fairly far down into Mexico.
Another spot that got hit hard by this thing.
Mostly,
and you can see how violent it was. I'm sure you've seen some of the video of this tornado.
Mostly in Mexico, but it does cover us.
Flying around it. Wind up close to 200 miles an hour at times. In fact, radar did get a look into the storm.
All right, so here's a little bit more on what's going on with the Democratic, the fight, the literal, almost a fist fight, throwing chairs, et cetera, in the Nevada convention. All is not well there. Well, let's actually take a little break here for some local weather and a few more stories, and we'll be right back to get into that. Dedication to Roberta, the corrupt leader of the Nevada Democratic Party. It's Kelly here, and yes, it is Weird Wednesday. We do have many weird stories that are just waiting to be released, but we had to get into this this thing with Hillary and the it is a revolt against, I guess, the most corrupt politician in America, according to one nonpartisan group. By the way, female Ross shopper upset man allowed to use women's dressing room. Meanwhile, woman marches through Target blasting trans bathroom policy. And yet another event, shocking. A lady who was in the bathroom in Walmart was confronted and accused of being a man and told to get out. And in fact, she was just apparently an ugly or very masculine woman. All right, here's a little bit more on the Roberta Lange illegally ending the Nevada convention. She doesn't get paid, and she's got a grandchild she's raising. Therefore, she's above criticism. All right, so it was chaotic. It was extremely loud, and so this lady Lang went up there and she ended this convention by taking a fake vote at the very end. And here's a little bit from a guy that was there, a Sanders supporter.
Good morning. My name is Dan Roll. I'm a congressional candidate in District 4 for the state of Nevada. It's very important that we talk about what happened yesterday at the Nevada State Democratic Party Convention. Now, there's a ton of social media, and it's difficult to get everyone's head wrapped around what happened. And it looks very interesting when you look at it on social media. And there was certainly a lot of chaos yesterday. But everyone's talking about what happened. We need to talk about why it happened. So I'm going to give you my very best summary as quickly as I can. And I've included on this thread all the relevant links for you to be able to take a look for yourself and educate yourself about what happened. The reality is, this has been brewing for several weeks. Basically, what happened is the executive board of the Nevada Democratic Party met and voted on a set of rules that allowed the state party chair, Roberta Lange, to essentially have complete control over the convention. It removed our ability to take motions from the floor. It removed our ability and gave her almost exclusive control over who was selected to run the board, which chose the eligibility of delegates. And it basically, as you saw in many videos, gave her complete control over the entire convention. Now, the whole point of this convention is you get everyone together. You do a count of the delegates for Sanders and a count of the delegates for Clinton. And, you award the national delegates proportionally in that accordance. So, essentially there was a petition that was filed several weeks ago, started by Angie. I have the link for the change.org petition. And basically it was challenging a lot of the rules that were set in place for the convention. We put Roberta in charge of the state convention without a vote. We gave her the power to appoint every officer who enforces the rules. We gave her the power to appoint every member of the committee who counted the vote and decided the delegates. And then we gave her the power to decide who gets to speak, who gets to motion. She also put in a place of rules that already existed, which basically said anyone who disrupts the convention can be removed. So, that part alone was really scary to a lot of people. So that group got that petition. They filed a lawsuit in court. Unfortunately, that lawsuit was dismissed on the grounds of essentially, the state government didn't feel it should be involved in party politics. And so unfortunately what that means for you and I is that a few members on an executive board can decide exactly what happens in the Democratic Party by squeezing out voices and, as I'll explain later, by literally throwing out votes. So flash forward, that same group decided to get together a group of petitions to challenge these rules. So basically what happens is the convention starts out with temporary rules. Right? Temporary rules. Then the body votes on those rules to enact those rules as the permanent rules. Well, the group that started the change.org petition got together and they decided to basically petition that set of rules and enact at the very base a set of rules called Robert's Rules, which you should look up. And in order to do that, they had the legal ability to do that. In order to do that, they needed to get a certain number, I believe it was 20% of the delegates attending had to sign a petition. So they circulated a number of petitions. And it's my understanding that they had the requisite number of signatures to challenge those rules, which is then why you saw the first outrage of the day, which was when Roberta unanimously decided to enact her rules of the convention without, you know, essentially having the vote. Now, the reality is, and why this is important, is because of the way the delegates were proportionally separated, not enough people were there, in theory, to actually enact the new rules, which is why it's even more outrageous that Roberta shut it down. Because if she had simply allowed the teams that were there to speak and have their voice, so much of this wouldn't have happened, because when it finally got to that vote, it's very possible, but you don't know, because, you know, she shut it down. It's possible that that vote might not have even happened. And so all of the chaos that she caused may not have even happened. So
people were screaming, throwing things. They were throwing chairs. There were, from what I understand, fist fights, all because this lady, this corrupt granny who's raising her 5-year-old grandchild, which has nothing to do with anything, gets up and throws the switch on this part. And I mean, the way that she did it, it's not like there were, like, you know, crowds of people pressing up against the dais and lectern, and she was in fear for her life. She got up there and just said, "I'll take the votes now. Yay, nay." You know, the yay have it, hits the gavel, and then just walk off home run. And it just looked terrible. And I mean, you know, she could have 3,000 grandkids, but that doesn't really defend what she did there. No wonder they're angry at Roberta. 6:49, Kelly O'Connor. We're going to come back and talk about a third party attempt to remove Donald Trump. How shocking, how scary. We'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in, and 805-61802 text. All right, so we know that the Sanders people are planning on protesting all the way to the end, and that could be the same situation that the Republican elites, not the people, because I think there is a sense that they're coming behind Trump, a lot of the people, but check this out. Third-party attempt to get rid of Trump by idiot losers like Mitt Romney. Just go away, Mitt.
If I were to tell you there were various scenarios to deny Donald Trump the Republican nomination in Cleveland, you'd say, wait a minute, I clicked on the wrong thing. This must be a video from a month ago. That's all over, right? Well, according to the press, it's not quite over. This is quite amazing, in fact. We have the Washington Post in a front page story quoting grassroots Republican conservative activists as plotting a way to deny Trump the nomination. And the idea is that all these delegates that have gone to Cleveland that were elected to support him, they will magically become unbound. They can vote for whoever they want. Now, would this completely and totally subvert the democratic process and make pointless the whole idea of having a whole season of primaries and caucuses where people vote for delegates who they think are going to support the candidate of their choice? Yes. Would it rupture and blow up the Republican Party? Yes. But there are people who are so opposed to the idea of a Trump nomination that they are seriously having these discussions. And then there's the whole third party bid. Bill Kristol, the editor of the Weekly Standard, seems to be the most visible crusader for this. He's met with Mitt Romney. He's talked to who doesn't want to do it. He's talked to Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse, who doesn't want to do it. He's talked to former Senator Tom Coburn, who doesn't want to do it. But nevertheless, he insists that some conservative will emerge, or he hopes that some conservative will emerge to lead an independent bid for the White House, turn this into a three-way race, and maybe if they're lucky, the whole thing gets thrown into the House of Representatives. That seems to me to be a fantasy. And if, in fact, there were to be a third-party conservative bid, in my opinion, I think it would hand the White House to Hillary Clinton because it would split the vote on the right. Now, you add all this up and you just kind of wonder, I understand that those who think that Trump would be a disaster in November, who they believe he's not a real conservative, they think he would ruin the GOP brand. I understand they think they're acting on principle. It's over. They lost. It is too late for this kind of thing. And yet, and in fact, if you look at the recent polls, and yes, it's only May and the polls can change, but nobody in the media establishment, well, nobody, first of all, very few thought if Donald Trump would get the GOP nomination, very few thought he would be instantly competitive against Hillary Clinton. Here's an NBC poll showing him trailing by 3, 48-45 nationally. That's margin of error stuff. Now, again, that could change, and Hillary's still running in her primaries against Bernie Sanders. When you add all this up, it just seems like there are diehard conservatives who believe it is their crusade, it is their mission to do anything they can to stop Donald Trump from being the Republican nominee. And I feel pretty comfortable in saying they're probably going to fail.
Of course they're going to fail, idiots. Oh, gosh. Who in whose universe is Donald Trump a worse president than Hillary Clinton? She's so crazy. She's just absolutely, I mean, the fact that she has to drag her husband into the doesn't that say everything about this woman who spent years claiming to be a feminist and how women can do it on their own and how, you know, everybody has doubted her and now she's going to show everybody. And now you have this, oh gosh, now she's going to bring in her husband. All right, here's a little last minute piece. Piece on New York Times. Will it move the needle? Well, I don't even want to do that. Here's some truckers who love Trump.
Two of the states key to winning the White House, Ohio and Pennsylvania. More than 500 miles of Interstate 80 runs through those swing states, and few have a better feel for the area's politics than the truck drivers who traverse that span every day. Joining us now from Columbus, Ohio, NBC correspondent and the butt of many mean jokes from my sidekicks here, Jacob Sobroff. Jacob, what are voters telling you?
Hey, good morning, Nicole. You said it. These highways may hold the key to who the next president of the United States is. And I was watching you guys earlier. It's amazing to hear about Priorities USA action. It's Hillary Clinton super PAC already spending $1.75 million in this state before the Democrats have even locked up their nomination. But yesterday, I was a little bit north of here on the Interstate 80 that runs between Ohio and Pennsylvania, two swing states. I went to the swingiest part of one of the swingiest states in the union, and check out what the folks there had to say to me. I'm at the Truck World truck stop on the I-80 corridor in Hubbard, Ohio, and very few roads are as important to the 2016 presidential election than this one because it runs through the swing states of Ohio and Pennsylvania, and nobody knows this area better than these truckers. Have you thought about who you're going to vote for yet?
I don't know. I don't trust either one of them right now.
Really? Is that when you say either one, that's Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton?
Yes.
Is it possible for Hillary Clinton to win over your vote?
Yes, it is.
And Donald Trump, possible for him?
Yeah, he had a lot to prove between now and then.
Retired salesman. So what are you doing here at Truck World?
Well, I have to do something. Everybody's got to be somewhere.
So what do you think's going to happen? You figured out which way you're going to go yet in that general election?
Yeah, I think so. I think Trump is the lesser of two evils.
Chuck, can you come with me for 1 second? I want to look at this map right here.
All right. So those truckers, they're going to support Trump. Of course they are. A lot of people have a fury and blind hatred towards the politically correct movement and all the corruption and all the old politicians, and Hillary represents all of that. We'll be back after a break on the hour to get into Weird Wednesday. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Okay, 7:06. It is the 18th of May. And we've got the possibility of some heavy rain here, according to AccuWeather. So I'm trying to text here. I just a friend of mine just had a kid, so Samuel Ellis Kane came in at 8 pounds, so congratulations to Sam Kane. You know, run all your announcements through me, feel free. 523-1450-805-6180. All right, so Hillary's in, but Hillary is a wounded leader, and she's down many, many percentage of votes from last time. All right, weird news, are you ready? I'm trying to find a good way to break this to you. This is truly, and I mean truly, a bizarre story. Even for our you know, you're used to the weirdness, but owner of Ragin' Cajun Barbecue strangles poodle and cooks it in smoker in, quote, sacrifice to atone for daughter's devil t-shirt. Now, that's a little hard to take on board there. The owner of Ragin' Cajun Smoking Barbecue in Arizona, who's a former Arizona State football player, he's only 42, but he looks about 60 here, maybe he feels regret over lighting up the family pet. He sacrificed his family's poodle during a fit of anger last Saturday that began when he was upset by the t-shirt his 17-year-old daughter was wearing, according to police in Arizona. Patrick Zane Thompson, former ASU football player, arrested by police at his home in Goodyear, and he admitted to strangling the poodle and then putting it into the traveling smoker he uses for his business. Now, I have to wonder, remove the skin? All right, so here is from heavy.com, five facts that you need to know. And he's with his wife. His wife looks like, I mean, she's got to be 350 pounds. She's got to be twice what this guy weighs. Anyway, he believed his daughter's shirt had to do with the devil and said he needed to sacrifice a male. Now, I'm assuming the poodle was a male. He first told his daughter to take off the shirt and then lit the smoker, which was parked in his yard. He put the shirt into the smoker, burning it. And I wonder if the aroma wafted up into the heavens. And then he went back into his house and became erratic, saying he had to sacrifice a male, according to court documents. And he had told police the Lord told him he was going to be killed for what he had done. He knew from his readings in the Bible he had to sacrifice a male. He chose the family's poodle over himself, according to his 6-year-old son anyway. And he picked up the family's white 50. Now, this guy happens to be African-American, but they picked up the white 15-pound poodle and strangled it until it couldn't breathe. And he told police he had to put the dog into, quote, this is, I'm not laughing at this, but he had to put the dog into a lake of fire. Oh, my God. He had to put the dog into, quote, a lake of fire, and that is when he put it in the smoker's heating element. Thompson has been married to his wife for 21 years and has 4 children. And his daughter claims that the father had a mental breakdown and turned to drugs. And so the daughter who brought the whole thing on the family, this whole curse on the family by wearing a devil worship t-shirt. Let me just this is what she put on her Facebook. Let me justify my dad had a mental breakdown from the stress of the business and other problems as a way of relieving stress. He turned to drugs. It wasn't the most responsible decision, but this could have happened to any one of us. Just pray for us. But Raging Cajun will be closed for a little bit just until this tension settled down and until my dad feeling better and on his feet. Just pray, please, and thank you. The post was deleted, and a second post was put up. At this time, we ask you to please keep the negative comments to yourself in light of his family who are seeing your comments and reviews. Pat is suffering from a deeply mental problem from being overstressed from the business. His family is grieving, and we ask that you please give his family some peace. In a third post on Facebook, without any apparent any room between words, just commas, friends, family, Cajunvites, social media, news reporters, bloggers, doubters, teammates, coworkers, and businesses. We aren't going to let this situation get us where we're not going to let the deceiver, the devil, get us down. We're going to look up with our heads held high and have a smile on our faces because Jesus is the one that can protect him, guide him, unconditionally love. He is the one that has the last say what happens. When I think of the goodness of Jesus and what he has done for me and my family, I get happy because God can turn a situation into a breakthrough praise party. In other words, turn that frown upside down, friends. As my dad would say, we needed to be a strong, prayed up, fierce leopards. Have faith. As for the business, we would not be closing it. It is going to remain open and stronger than ever, and apparently with a new menu. Don't let this situation change how you feel about him. He's a good man. He has a caring attitude, good husband and loving father, and enjoys hot dogs. Hot being the resident word there. God has all this in his hands. Keep the faith. Don't give up. It's only a test. Know what you're going through. Don't give up. It's only a test. Hold on. Be strong. Now, what is she doing spitting this stuff if she's wearing a devil t-shirt? Earlier in the day, Ed Thompson had smoked a marijuana cigarette and had an episode. It makes me wonder if it was not, in fact, laced with something. He was found by police outside of his home in Goodyear, a self-inflicted wound to his arm. And he said he went outside to surrender to God and pray after sacrificing the dog. How do they know that the self-inflicted wound wasn't a dog bite? Three, he was a starting offensive lineman for the Arizona State in 66 and was a social worker for the state of Arizona. And four, he owned the barbecue business since 2010. And five, he is being held on a $20,000 bail at Maricopa County Jail. Well, he's charged with two felonies and four misdemeanors. The charges include animal cruelty, assault, threats against his family, and tampering with evidence. But if he really did choose between sacrificing a male human being and a male dog, I think we need to all be grateful that he chose the family pooch. All right. Now, let's take a little break here. Next, I have a guy that is so liberal, it's going to make you want to vomit. I mean, don't you usually want to vomit near liberals when you hear their ideas? All right, I can't take any more classical music. Here's some Eric Clapton, Alberta, Unplugged MTV. It's almost as good as Roberta. 714 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in, and 805-6180. If you have your own dog sacrifice stories, just keep them to yourself. We'll be right back. at 719. Did you, by the way, did you you're going to get into this liberal story, but did you hear about the idiot that put a bison calf in their car and then they had to euthanize it? I don't know if they had to euthanize it. I mean, when I heard that, it immediately made me think that why don't you just take it to a zoo somewhere, but apparently removing it from the herd and petting it and sticking it in your car. What kind of a freaking clown takes a bison calf how do you get a bison calf away from the herd to begin with? These are like, you know, 2,000-pound animals, and then sticks it in their car for a photo op. I mean, this person should be locked up. It should be under psychiatric care. All right, here is this stupid story. Weird news.
Bison calf at Yellowstone National Park was euthanized after an encounter with humans. A father-son duo thought this newborn bison was lost and looked really cold. So they loaded the animal into their car, the trunk of their car, and drove it to a park station. Well, park rangers tried many times after the fact to reunite the calf with its mother, but it appears the mother rejected it.
The mother hates humans. The mother is aware of global warming.
Sadly, the animal had to be put down because it kept approaching people and cars, causing a very dangerous situation. Now, rules at Yellowstone National Park are clear. Getting near or approaching wildlife is prohibited. I'm joined now on the phone by Morgan Warrison.
Well, they take people that do that and stick them in Camp Hope. They didn't have to euthanize it.
Public affairs specialist for Yellowstone National Park. Appreciate you taking the time, Morgan. First of all, just tell us about what happened to this poor calf and why this bison had to be euthanized.
So on May 9th, these international visitors, they picked up this newborn bison calf. And like you said,
this girl has the voice of somebody at a poetry reading.
They had thought that the calf was suffering. So they, from concern for the calf, they picked it up, they put it in their vehicle, and they drove it to a ranger station and met up with a ranger to give the ranger the calf.
You know, and we just stated there that, you know, when the park rangers tried to reunite this calf with its mother, the mother rejected the baby. Why is that? What happens when a human interferes in this way?
Oftentimes what happens is that the animal no longer has the smell of the mother nor the smell of the herd. The animal smells like something very foreign to the mother, and that's why the calf was rejected. And know, too, that this is a natural occurrence. This does happen to newborn bison calves on occasion in the park.
How often does it happen when you have cases like this where tourists who, I guess, don't know any better, who are well-intended, see a quote-unquote suffering calf, or so they assume the calf is suffering, and pick up a baby animal and try to bring it to a ranger thinking that they're helping this animal?
You know, the last time that I know of an incident like this occurring was about a decade ago. Mm. So it is rare for visitors to actually pick up a newborn calf. What we do find, though, very common happening is visitors that are getting closer and closer to wildlife, closer than what they should be doing.
Because they forget that it's wild. And there's another story in here that... shocked visitors watch woman pet bison. And then there's another story, housebroken 1,000-pound bison sold on Craigslist, which is its own weird story. I wonder if Hillary will be it as no longer having the scent of the Democratic Party on her. What do you think? And then rejected by the party. Maybe that's, don't you think Bernie smells more like a Democrat than Hillary does? I mean, for heaven's sakes. But anyway, bison in the news, a little subheading here. And I got a little bit on this Craigslist story, which is amazing. Don't, folks, don't buy. If you're going to buy a pet bison, don't get it off Craigslist. Check this out.
Well, everything is bigger in Texas, as we know, including the pets, apparently. Meet Bullet. She's a 1,000-pound housebroken bison who was put on sale on Craigslist. The bison's owner says she had outgrown her home and needed a better one. The Craigslist ad listed Bullet for almost $6,000.
Aww.
I'm not sure that would fit in my apartment in New York.
No, would not. I can guarantee you that.
Kind of an idiot. Anyway, I won't even ask the question. What kind of an idiot would raise a bison? That'd be like raising a dinosaur in your house and then complaining that it got too big. All right. Now, we've been talking about the earthquakes and the eruptions, and according to Rev Dussault, yes, it's the sign of the last days. Well, for those of you who are in that camp, and I doubt that would include Frankie and Kathy and probably Walt, 5.6 magnitude earthquake shakes Tokyo. That's almost to the sixth threshold on May 16th, 2 days ago. So that's a pretty big earthquake. And it sounds a little bit scary. All right, so more weird news. All right, a guy that you're going to instantly hate or feel so sorry for him. And this is from Jihad Watch in Norway. Leftist feels guilty that Muslim who raped him was deported. Are you kidding me? That is like, oh, gosh. Just to hear that makes me want to just vomit. After anal rape, left-wing activist felt guilt and responsibility. His migrant attacker was deported. A left-wing activist has bared all to a Norwegian documentary crew about his rape at the hands of a Somalian migrant and his despair at seeing the man deported. An active member of the Norwegian Socialist Leftist Party, who described himself as an ardent feminist and anti-racist, of course, explained the difficulty he experienced accepting that he had been anally raped by a male migrant. And he said he didn't blame the man for the attack at all and regretted that he had been sent back to Somalia. Maybe he started developing warm feelings towards him. Sounds like it. Describing the process of reconciling his personally held beliefs, the young socialist activist Karsten Nordahl Hauken said the experience left him feeling nothing. He's in denial, folks. He's going to lapse into depression. As a young man, his rapist was convicted 6 months after the fact with DNA evidence removed from Mr. Hauken's body, which you can just guess what part of the body that came from. The Somalian male was later caught when he was found to be carrying a knife in public. His fingerprints were a match. Although he protested his innocence, he claimed he had enjoyed a consensual relationship with Mr. Hauken, but the migrant was sentenced to 4.5 years in prison. After the completion of his jail term, the man was deported back to Somalia, and his victim felt mixed emotions about that, but in Somalia, rape may not be against the law. In these, did you know in Muslim law, there has to be 4 witnesses to a rape, and they have to agree on every detail, or the prosecution will be turned around on them, and they will get the penalty that a rapist gets? I mean, not just generally, but in every specific detail. How many rapes have 4 witnesses? Although in Islam, in Islamic lands, I think you can't assume anything. So this guy is, he said he's had a strong sense of guilt and responsibility. I was the reason he was, should not have to leave Norway and heading for a very uncertain future in Somalia. Funny how, when you rape somebody in another country, how that works out. Now he's already been sentenced to prison. Should he be punished again? And this time much harder. And Hauken found himself unable to blame his attacker, saying he's not responsible for his actions. Rather, the rapist being in charge of his own destiny. He said he was merely a product. He wasn't in charge of his own destiny. Instead, he was a product of an unjust world, a product of an upbringing marked by war and deprivation, and said that rather than the attack being sexually motivated, it was all about exerting power over him and apparently leaving some DNA evidence behind. The attack has not dulled, has taken away the enthusiasm and the joy of his left-wing beliefs. Houghton said, quote, "I stand rock solid in my opinion that people like him need our help. I want to us to continue to help refugees with such a background, for I am a human being first and not a Norwegian. No, I'm part of the world, and the world is unfortunately unfair." If the world is unfortunately unfair, does that mean we can put up our gosh dang fence and keep all the other wackos out? All right, so all the other potential rapists. Did you know the vast majority of women traveling through Mexico to come to America get raped? I was informed by this. 523-1450 if you disagree. And we'll take a break here. AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE. 523-1450 and 805-6180. Kelly O'Connell will be right back. 7:30 on the button. All right, so in Las Vegas, this story might really piss you off here. In Vegas, there's a zip line that goes down across the strip, and people kind of, you know, get on this thing, and then they take this. Basically, they're hooked up to this line with a little backpack with their stuff in it, and they kind of fly over these tourists that are down there. Well, according to the Seattle PI website, what happens in Vegas gets sprayed in Vegas. A 15-year-old boy zipping down the Slotzilla zip line at the Fremont Street Experience, which is downtown, I can say from having grown up there, downtown old Vegas, where the bus station and train station used to be. He went down the Slotzilla zip line at the Fremont Street Experience on Wednesday and sprayed visitors below with his urine, according to reports. Like a lot of liquid coming from above, just showering from head to toe, our back and the top of our head dripping down, and we thought it was some sort of water, maybe some drinks or beer, said tourist Casimir Ferguson. So there's the grossest quote of the year is what it's been called. So, and can't really disagree with that. All right. And they don't know if it was on purpose or accident, but the authorities were looking into it. All right. Now, aggressive bees swarming Concord, California, and they're zooming in and stinging people. And they're also, it's not just crazy barbecue owners that are killing dogs. So are these angry Africanized bees, two dogs killed.
Like a scene from The Birds, except it's the bees. Aggressive bees are on the attack in an East Bay neighborhood, stinging people, killing animals. The problem has gotten so bad, even the police are getting involved. And even our own Dahl Lynn was nearly attacked. He joins us live from, this is hard to believe, Hitchcock Road, really, in Concord, duh.
Yeah, ironic, isn't it? Brian, the beehive is about two blocks back that way, but those bees are so aggressive, they chased two police officers and myself and a lot of neighbors out of that area, so we're keeping a safe distance for this live shot here. So far, those bees have killed two dogs and stung a bunch of people. The bees are so relentless, I couldn't get out of my van. Even with the windows closed, they're still trying to get in, pounding at the window. A beekeeper says the hive is somewhere back there, near this carport. The bees have taken over a couple of blocks of Hitchcock Road, attacking anything and anyone who's outside. Even chased a police officer back into this cruiser. It's hard to even do an interview. God, take you sucker. Got me right in the eye.
Probably 7, 8, 9 times out of 10. Ah.
The venom from the stinger causes the skin to swell. Aside from attacking people, those bees yesterday killed a bird and these two dogs, Milo and Gunner. The vet tells me she stopped counting after she pulled out 50 stingers from each dog. A professional beekeeper believes these are Africanized killer bees.
If you ignore them, like me right now, they don't sting you. If you make some, like, very fast movement, I show you right now, so they start be more aggressive. Oh yeah, oh yeah.
See them all climbing up my hair, just trying to get to my head, and I'm like, I don't know what to do. I'm just running around, screaming.
All right, so two dogs gave up their lives. Hopefully they died in protecting the family from these Africanized bees, but I highly doubt it. They are probably just in the wrong place at the wrong time. All right. Very weird story about this lady who apparently died when she was on a cruise ship out in the Gulf of Mexico. And a video shows her name is Samantha Broberg, and there's a picture of her with her husband. U.S. Coast Guard suspended its search for a missing Texas woman who fell from a Carnival cruise ship in the Gulf of Mexico. Samantha Broberg, 33, went overboard about noon on May 13th. And they say, quote, based on video analysis, we can confirm that it appears she climbed up and sat on a deck railing and subsequently fell backwards. And the Liberty ship, Carnival Liberty, was about 200 miles southeast of Galveston. And her husband is a top-notch thoroughbred horse trainer. And but no, she fell. She didn't fall at noon. She fell at night. That's why people didn't really know where she was. And so she was, they did a count of the people on the ship and they came up with this lady that was missing. And then they had to go back through the videos and to find out that she had fallen overboard. And by that time, I mean, I'm sure she was probably drowned. And who knows if you're falling in it. And a lot of these ships are, you know, they're very big. And so she might've fallen a very long way. So she might have been knocked out when she hit the water. Video shows Broberg falling from ship's 10th deck at about 2 a.m. And The cruise left Galveston on Thursday for a four-day cruise in the Gulf of Mexico. Lives in Arlington with her husband and four children, or she did, for the ship's crew searched the room by room. It couldn't find her. And so they're reporting that they're the Carnival Cruise is trying to give some support. But here's a little bit on the story from ABC News.
Desperate search for a mother missing at sea. Security video shows her falling overboard from a Carnival cruise ship in the Gulf of Mexico. The ship, 200 miles off the Texas coast, the Coast Guard contacted hours after she disappeared. ABC's Marcy Gonzalez on the race to find her.
Tonight, the Coast Guard scouring part of the Gulf of Mexico for this mother of four who went overboard from a cruise ship. The Carnival Liberty was heading from Galveston to Cozumel at around 2 Friday morning when the Coast Guard says Samantha Broberg somehow fell into the water from the 10th story of the ship. Officials explain her friends didn't realize she was missing until later that day and notified Carnival staff.
The announcements started coming every 5 minutes. And we knew that there is somebody missing.
The cruise line says following procedure, they searched the ship and surveillance video, discovering Broberg's fall was caught on camera. Soon after, at 5 Friday evening, the Coast Guard says they were notified a full 15 hours after Broberg went overboard.
Because so much time had passed, it definitely makes it more difficult to find somebody and save them.
Cases like this are extremely rare. Carnival says as a safeguard, they are now testing alarm systems like this that sound when someone goes overboard, though the cruise line says those systems have historically not been reliable. And the Coast Guard tells us they will keep searching for Broberg as long as she could still be alive. Her family saying tonight they are hopeful.
That is, I'm going to guess, at least a 100-foot drop. I mean, however she landed, I mean, I can't imagine that, easily she could have had the wind knocked out of her and, immediately inhaled some water. So anyway, poor thing. 743 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell here, 523-1450 to call in and 805-6180 to text. And we got more weird news. You're going to love it. There's just juicy stories right around the corner.
Alberta, Alberta.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, Kelly, it's Dave.
Hey, what's going on?
Not much. I've been listening to your show.
Good, man. Appreciate it. What's going on?
Nothing, man. Did you catch the pufffish incident in Death Valley?
What was it?
The guy goes in there, three guys on an ATV, drinking beer, throwing up all over, blow the lock off the gate, go into the fishing hole, the cave lake, and wash their boxer shorts out and leave them in there. And then they find the dead pufffish floating. And there's like 500 pufffish on planet Earth, and they're all in that lake.
I'm looking it up right now, man. This is hilarious.
That goes well with the bison. I think those guys might have made it to Yellowstone after the devil's lake.
Oh, my God. That's so funny. I'm glad that you called in. Are you enjoying the show?
Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah.
Not a 10, but a 9 or an 8?
Well, I don't listen regular.
Yeah.
So I can't.
I got
I'm
you. No.
My baseline right now.
No, so. I was asking if you're enjoying it today.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Weird Wednesday, yeah. You gotta. So my sister was talking about Coast to Coast and everything. She said you should do a show that's like that, but on one day of the week. I'm like, Weird Wednesday works for me. Hey, did you want to say anything on the air?
No, not really.
Because I'm back on the air. I'm back on the air. I'll talk to you later.
All right.
Thanks. All right, folks, so I just got a tip If you've got weird stories, bring them on. Don't be afraid. You're just helping the community. All right, here's a tip that I just got. Men questioned about vandalism that may have killed rare fish. Pahrump, Nevada. Now, growing up, my dad had bought a little bit of land in Pahrump, and it was just kind of an agricultural valley. And it's certainly not as nice as our valley. It was it's kind of an alkali desert out there, but it's about 30 miles away from Vegas. Anyway, three Nevada men have been questioned by investigators about vandalism in an environmentally fragile area of Death Valley National Park that may have killed one of the rarest fishes on Earth. No arrests were made in April, but authorities continue to investigate if it could be a federal crime. Nye County Sheriff Sergeant David Berukowitz said, and Pahrump is where what's-his-face from the Kardashians, the football or the basketball player. That's where I think the whorehouse was that he went into. Men from Pahrump, Indian Springs, and North Vegas may be held responsible for the death of at least one critically endangered devil's hole pupfish. Wow. That's a new nickname I can give to somebody. Devil's hole pupfish. Okay. And along with conspiracy, trespassing, and damage to habitat, Berukowitz said a sheriff's deputy, the sheriff's sergeant, was able to identify an off-road vehicle through a surveillance video. And investigators determined three had been shooting rabbits in the area before they climbed a fence into Devil's Hole, a protected sanctuary in Nevada just east of Death Valley. Police said they fired at least 10 shotgun blasts in the preserve, hitting a motion sensor and shooting the locks up two gates. National Park Service said they left it beer cans and vomit. And one man had waded into Devil's Hole, leaving his boxer shorts in the water. And on Monday, one of the pupfish was found dead. Although it wasn't clear if there was any connection. Just 115 of the inch-long pupfish are found in a periodic count last month in their hot spring-fed pool, which is more than 400 feet deep in parts, but less than 2 feet where they feed. And maybe they didn't like feeding on vomit. But anyway, interesting. Now, here's another story. Three men arrested in death of rare fish at Death Valley. So this is an update. And they could face fines of up to $50,000 in a year in jail for an alleged drunken spree that resulted in the death of one of the world's rarest fish. And holy cow. And so Eileen Anderson, a senior scientist at the Center for Biological Diversity, say we're looking forward to seeing these three men brought to justice. And the iridescent fish swim only in 93-degree water of Devil's Hole. And okay, interesting. All right, here is another story, and this is less entertaining. Bring them back. Untold thousands of patients misdiagnosed as vegetative are actually aware. So in other words, many people that they think that are totally mindless are actually mindful, but you just can't tell that they were alive. And Ian McPherson, a mentally ill person who believed he had been implanted with a radio transmitter by the government, is accused of shooting two cops in New Hampshire. Happened early May 13th around 10 a.m. and 2:30 a.m. And two charges of attempted capital murder against this guy. He looks a little bit like Cato Kalin. He has long hair and kind of a chiseled face and a little goatee. Number one, he thought a member of Adolf Hitler's family was stalking him. And now here's a little bit of his rant. Witness statement concerning genocide in the USA, neuroscience, terrorism, genocide, GPS, brain computer interface, neuroscience, surgical implants being implanted. So he thought he was implanted with a device. And he thought Vittorio Emanuele was stalking him, who is a relation to Adolf Hitler, and he believes he was implanted with a tracker. And he says, unfortunately, people are going to blame the government, Obama, but this has nothing to do with him. It was 5.5 years ago done in a hospital. And both officers are going to survive. And Ian McPherson was initially described as a white man with long hair wearing a trench coat with a black backpack. Boy, is that a cliche or what? All right, so One witness said he heard 10 to 12 shots fired total. And all right, so anyway, we'll take a little break here and come back and talk about people that are apparently comatose but actually can hear everything that you say. You go to the hospital to visit a comatose friend. Remember that. He could be listening. We'll be right back. 751 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB, 523 1450 and 805 6180. Hey, it's Kelly.
Hi, Kelly. Hey, did they x-ray that guy?
I have no idea, man. You think you might have a transmitter in him?
Fuck, dude. That shit's real. Look up Delgado's bull. And a guy named Leonard Kiel, K-I-L-E, I think. And that goes way back, man. Yeah, they have some Manchurian weird shit. I mean,
Leonard Kyle?
Yeah, I think it's K-I-L-L-E or K-I-L-E. It's Leonard something. He's a documented case of
brain implant victims.
Yeah, but that was in like the Sacramento Bee or something like that.
All right, okay, I got it coming up. Hey, listen, I got to prep for the last part of the show because I haven't read those articles.
Yeah,
all right. Thanks. All right, so here is the story from the aeon.com, A-E-O-N.com. Bring them back until thousands of patients misdiagnosed as vegetative are actually aware. Theirs is the civil right of our time. All right, so telling the story of having given a talk about a severe brain injury when the story of Terry Wallace, a man in Arkansas who'd had a car accident in 1984, came up. The parents were told he was in a permanently comatose state. Then in 2003, and think about that, that's 20 years later, he began to speak. Tentatively, at first he said mom and then Pepsi. A stunning development. And baffling doctors. And why? Because the vegetative state has gained an almost iconic status in the United States, and especially after Karen Ann Quinlan's 1976 right to die case when her ventilator was removed. So what they have realized is that this is not exceptional either. Medical literature has developed the idea of the minimally conscious states, MCS, and Terry's case, the guy that didn't communicate for 20 years, is less exceptional than it first appears. A 2009 study showed that 41% of vegetative patients with traumatic brain injury in nursing homes are in fact minimally conscious. They appear vegetative, but retain awareness of their environment and almost, and some even respond. So this is why we can't go around randomly. Remember that fight in Florida where they were fighting over that lady and that the lady's ex-husband was fighting for her to be able to die? And then there was also a debate that he didn't want her to come back because he had actually caused the state that he had attacked or whatever. And nobody really knew the full story, but then she was finally allowed to die, which I thought was kind of bizarre. I mean, why fight for the right for somebody who's not able to say whether they want to die so that they can die? Anyway, Terry's case shows that brains recover by biological mechanisms. In his own time, we don't understand how brains fix themselves, but they do at some times. And so it is not for us to say whether someone is, you know, beyond the point of no return. All right, here's another story that's very, very sad. A woman killed by doctors because she was obsessed with cleaning. One of a growing number of Dutch people given the right to euthanasia because of mental illness, not terminal illness. Now, she was the victim of a very severe case of sexual abuse as a child and found that as she got older, and this is true of a lot of sex abuse children, as people age, they don't get better, they get worse because their coping mechanisms fail. But she had she was a very successful person in business and had to quit, and she became so ill 12 years ago as a manager in a pharmaceutical industry. She quit, and then she would stay home. She was very depressed, and she would, at 45 years old, spend all of her time cleaning, which, I don't know, sounds like the perfect wife, doesn't it? But anyway, she had gotten a little bit better, but she had a litany of ailments: incurable post-traumatic stress disorder, therapy-resistant anorexia, suicidal mood swings, tendencies to self-harm, hallucinations, and chronic depression. And they said that there was no cure, so they allowed her to kill herself. But my friend Judy, remember what he had said, that he is a pastor, and he said that the only cure that he's ever found for these people that are survivors of horrific sexual abuse is prayer and worship, I think is what he said. Another girl who had been sexually abused was allowed to kill herself. Related story, the Dutch are allowing people who are not terminally ill to kill themselves. And it is kind of sad because the psychiatric community admitting it's powerless to help some of these people. Anyway, thanks for listening in. And Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. If you are an abuse survivor, there are treatments out there that are available. And my sister was telling me about one, an eye movement treatment that has been remarkably successful in transferring traumatic memories from one part of the brain to other where it can be addressed. Anyway, have a great day. We'll come back in 22 hours and do it again. Ciao, AM Las Cruces, 1450. Have a great day. Ciao.